The Athletic.
Would you like to reach hundreds of thousands of Athletic subscribers? Who wouldn't? Our lot are great. They're intelligent. They have demonstrably long attention spans for all of those long reads. And that means they're almost certainly the ABC ones you're looking for. Imagine your brand front and centre on the Totally Football Show, or Talk of the Devils, or Football Clichés. You can advertise with us now. Our highly skilled and effortlessly charming commercial team are waiting to hear from you, whether you want a single ad on View from the Lane or full title sponsorship on our Women's World Cup show. We've got something for everyone.
Contact partnerships@theathletic.com. That's partnerships@theathletic.com.
Football Show. Today, Deadpool shows up in the FA Cup and loses 2-1 away at Brighton. Elsewhere, former X-Man sees his Wrexham play entertainingly with the Blades, much like he does in his movies. We'll be talking about events at the Racecourse Ground and City Arsenal and Grimsby and Spurs and Sunderland and much more in this Totally Football Show. Monday, 30th of January, Daniel Storey. Hello, Daniel.
Good morning, James.
Good morning to you, Tim Spears.
Hi, James.
Good morning to you, Tim Spears. And Liam Tharm joining us. Liam.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Unlike Tim Spears, Tim.
Sort of like 80% fit, James, but you know.
Okay.
Well, I'll be all right for the first hour and then we'll see how it goes after that.
Have you got cup fever?
That's it. That's what Preston 0, Spurs 3 does to you.
All right. I look forward to feeling some of the effects of that secondhand later on. Are we going to have Liam raving about Brighton? We're going to have Daniel's thoughts on that keenly anticipated City-Arsenal clash and so much more. Probably also get a bit of a chat about Everton. They've got a new manager, I think. Probably by the time you hear this, it'll be official. Is it Marcelo Bielsa or the man often described as the Burnley Marcelo Bielsa, Sean Dyche? It's Sean Dyche, isn't it?
It is Sean Dyche, yeah. Spoiler alert, it's Sean Dyche. Which I think, if your two options are as a club, if you've done this huge managerial search and you've come down to two options that you are sure that either of them will be perfect, and one of them is Bielsa and one of them is Sean Dyche, it probably says something about your approach to that managerial search. But I think they probably have landed on the right answer for the now. And I mean, we were told that their biggest worry about Dyche was like, you know, what about the long term? And it kind of made me laugh in that it seems like the first time anyone's thought about Everton's long term for about half a decade. So, yeah, if that's the issue, then they're probably all right.
I dispute this notion that Everton are necessarily badly run just because their two candidates are wildly diverse managerial options. We've all been in a restaurant and, you know, wanted the fish but been tempted by the burger, no? And they're both right options in different ways, surely.
I wrote a piece on Dyche last week and I kind of married up the same equation. I went for kind of chicken farl or beans on toast. It was a bit more of a diverse end of the spectrum than chicken or fish. I just don't know where they're at all as a club. I think that squad is miles better than Lampard made it look, and I think Dyche will probably be the perfect manager. So you look at kind of little elements of the squad, you know, Tarkowski and Cody and Michael Keane, who he knows as well, and then you look at, you know, kind of Morpay and Calvert-Lewin is a kind of Ashley Barnes, Chris Wood upgrade maybe, and you've got the wingers and Dwight McNeil's going to see him. Anthony Gordon money, which is the big thing. Is it sounds like they're going to let him to spend 40 million in 2 days, which is a kind of supermarket sweep I'd pay to watch. I think they'll be fine. I really do.
Okay. I'm picturing Sean Dyche in a supermarket with an actual trolley and 45 million. I'm wondering what the contents of said trolley would be.
But what's he going to wear? That's the question. Is this a new cliche now with the tight white shirt in the cold weather? I hope not, because he's becoming a bit of a caricature in a Big Sam sort of way. And he's becoming a bit of a cliched survival specialist. And the other thing that's happening is that Everton are becoming Sunderland in the early sort of 2010s, where they're struggling every season. They change their manager halfway. They end up staying up. And then come October, November, December next year, they'll get bored of Dyche and fans won't be happy with him and they'll change the manager again. I mean, I think it was David Moyes who eventually took Sunderland down after 10 years of that purgatory. And yet Everton reportedly did want to hire him this season, which would have set alarm bells ringing for me. But it feels like a short-term solution, but I think as Daniel seems to be saying, I agree that they will stay up.
Mm, a short-term solution, but a solution. Liam, are we a little bit prejudiced, do you think, about Sean Dyche, about Dyche Ball? You know, Tim calling him a bit of a caricature there.
I mean, perhaps. I think he's become quite an acquired taste. Definitely not for everyone. I remember Michael Cox wrote a piece a little while ago, sort of looking at how they were really the last long ball team in sort of the Premier League. But I think it's important to look at the squad they've got. I know he's literally worked with some of these players before, but they probably suit a direct approach and at least have got, you know, a good defensive unit. I watched their game against City recently when they drew 1-1. I think they scored one goal from sort of two shots and it was a really, really good goal. But defensively, they were largely quite sound. So there's good foundations there, and I think everyone enjoyed seeing them sort of drag themselves out of this mess a year ago. Obviously, Goodison Park, I know, can be quite literally a cauldron of noise, for better or for worse sort of thing. As Tim, you know, said, that their squad is good. It's definitely good enough, but I think the base of everyone's squad in the league has definitely gone up. You look at West Ham and other teams around them and you go, there's so much quality there. There's internationals that we've watched at the World Cup and you go, how are all these teams in this mess? Particularly when you compare to teams further up the league that maybe haven't got that individual quality but are a coherent, functioning team that are getting more results on a consistent basis.
Mm. Oh, perhaps Everton will be joining that happy band. All right, well, more to come, no doubt, on the Toffees. But for now, on to FA Cup fourth round. Woo! No giant killings this weekend. The only Premier League sides to tumble came at the hands of fellow Premier League sides. Man City, for example, beating Arsenal 1-0 on Friday. Brighton knocking out holders Liverpool 2-1 on Sunday. Leicester, Leeds and Spurs all getting through their ties. A cup performance of the weekend came at the Racecourse Ground, where National League Wrexham almost put out Sheffield United, who are just two places below the Premier League, in a six-goal thriller before the Blades' stoppage time equaliser. That'll go to a replay, as will almost half of this weekend's ties. Sheffield Wednesday and Fleetwood, Blackburn and Birmingham, Ipswich and Burnley, Luton and Grimsby, and Fulham and Sunderland. Monday night, we'll have the draw for the fifth round, followed by Derby against West Ham. We start this Sunday afternoon, Wrexham 3, Sheffield United 3.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. You can get the latest football betting odds at LiveScoreBet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Here comes Sheffield United's corner from the right. Doyle into the area. It's going to be in! Yes! By John Egan! John Egan at the back post! You can hear the silence from the home fans!
Yeah, that was Sheffield United 3, courtesy of John Egan ruining the hashtag script with that 95th minute equaliser. What an extraordinary match of football this was.
Yeah, I think we're all tired of talking about FA Cup magic, definitely. But it's definitely also fair to say that the Cup has changed. And I think the two type of ties that are the best now are upwardly mobile, in-form, non-league team against Championship team, because it's a legitimate upset if they get a result, but they're not just going to get swatted aside by a Premier League team. And big club in League One against Premier League team. And I'm at that tonight in Derby West Ham. I think they're the two best type of ties now. And this lived up to that billing perfectly, because Wrexham are an astonishing football team to watch at the moment. I did a long read on them, went to Wrexham the other week, and there is a genuine buzz about the football club in the town now. And I know it's a kind of sort of celebrity ownership and a foreign ownership and a kind of almost unique style of ownership, in that you know, there's an associated documentary series and so on and so forth, and yet it still feels very real. It still feels very kind of, in inverted commas, proper football. And that was a proper football tie. It was everything you want for an FA Cup game, kind of just sort of on pitch madness, nonsense, red cards, everything. Brilliant.
It even had a tin foil cup with "F the Tories" written on it.
Yeah, I saw F de Torres on on the Tinfoil FA Cup. I didn't know it was Ferran's or Fernando's brother.
A message previously celebrated, of course, on Paul Mullins' boots, controversially. He took to the field this time around with an autism awareness symbol and also wearing noise-cancelling headphones after his son Albie was diagnosed with autism the previous week, and had, late on, put Wrexham on course for a 3-2 win before Egan's late equaliser. Liam, what did you make of Wrexham? What do you make of their chances of being able to reproduce this magic as well at Bramall Lane?
It always feels more difficult when you haven't got the home field advantage. I think Mullen's a really interesting case study for Wrexham as sort of a club. He was top scorer for Cambridge. I think he got 30-odd goals and they went up either a couple of seasons ago now. And then obviously quite controversially took a couple steps down to the National League and was quite quickly branded with, oh, you're just doing this for the money. And it's obviously now sort of been a feature on their sort of documentary side of things. So I think he sort of shows what they're building. And the good thing for, I think, Wrexham at the moment is you don't look at this game as they need this. This is sort of, they have to do this now. They look like we've said they're on the upward trajectory. Definitely harder to do without the atmosphere and the home field advantage. I think the pitch didn't look great and maybe played into their hands a little bit. I noticed how sort of narrow the pitch was as well in terms of width, and they had so much space there. They had a bombardment of long throws. Of course, they scored from one and looked a real good threat from set pieces. So, yeah, maybe if the Sheffield United have got any sense, they'll make that pitch as wide as possible and then try to keep the ball in play a bit more.
Ben Tozer with those phenomenal lobs, which presumably is going to be a weapon at Bramall Lane as well. He also saw the Blades reduced to 10 men after Daniel Jebison was sent off for kicking him off the ball. What a display. I mean, we should praise the Blades for kind of sticking at it and getting that late equaliser. But equally, Wrexham, the way the game began with it, conceding that goal about a minute in, then losing both of their centre-halves.
Yeah, that was in the first 10 minutes. They conceded a goal and lost two players to injury. And obviously the atmosphere, which was so key to the game for Wrexham, was just completely popped at that point. So full credit to them. The long throws and the set pieces played a big part of that. And that's why I think that they will have a chance in the replay. I mean, we saw at Coventry as well. They'll certainly take a few thousand up to Bramall Lane. But will Ryan Reynolds be there? That's the question. I switched on 5 minutes before kickoff, and the cameras were just starting to sort of pan around the ground and the stands, etc. And then between then and the fifth minute of the game, Ryan Reynolds had been shown 5 times in 10 minutes on camera. Literally any incident that happened, including a player walking off injured, they would go straight to Reynolds to see his reaction. And obviously, you know, stoic applause for an injured player going off as wow. But yeah, it's impressive for him to be there. I know it's all part of the documentary for him to be watching, etc., but it shows great commitment. I think he was literally flew in for the game and then flew back again. And I watched back his interview with Gary Lineker on BBC last night, and you can tell this doesn't seem like it's going to be a short-term fix. They're in there for the long term, and they've definitely bought into the, as Daniel will know, having written about it, the culture of the city and the community, and it feels like a long-term project.
All right, he sounds convincing, and it's not like he's paid to say words convincingly for a living or anything. So I think we can all be confident that he's no, but he's. It certainly seems like his heart's in the right place. There you go. All right. Well, Wrexham's XG was 3.2. Sheffield United's was 0.8. Nancy Frostick saying on Thursday, pointing out that big Wrexham games always seem to get loads of goals. This certainly fitted that model. Of course, they've been 4-3 winners at Coventry, which Tim was referencing in the last round. In fact, they are now the first non-league team ever, niche stat ahoy, to score 3 goals or more in 4 consecutive games in the FA Cup proper. What do you make of that?
I don't quite know yet.
I'm not sure either. All right. Well, there you go. Anyway, it was terrific fun. And the second pretty entertaining match on Sunday, because earlier on, down at the Amex on Sunday lunchtime, we had Brighton 2, Liverpool 1. Liam's beloved Brighton beating Liverpool again for the second time in what, 2 weeks? Liam, how good a day was this? Was it even better than the 3-0 in the league?
Yes and no. I think any late drama, as we've seen in quite a few games, is good. There's, you know, the ways you want to win a game ideally are really convincingly, which was more so in the Premier League fixture earlier on the season, where was up to sort of 2-3-0 fairly sort of early, midway through the game. Liverpool definitely had a lot more control this time. They definitely improved sort of their structure defensively. They weren't sort of getting pulled apart as much in wide areas, but there was no Adam Lallana this time, and the way that Robert De Zerbi went sort of around that was he tried playing Danny Welbeck with Evan Ferguson, which is, you know, almost sort of 4-4-2, which isn't really sort of the way that he's approached things before. And the game sort of changed really when Billy Gilmore came on, I think. And actually, it looked quite defensive as a sub to bring on a midfielder, but that allowed Alexis McAllister to sort of push forward, and then you really got Kerem Mitoma in particular sort of higher and wider on the left. And of course, he ends up scoring the winning goal, and I think his composure's incredible, but probably should have set up the winner, I think about 20 minutes before, when he had that really good outside the boot cross for Solly Marchu. Incredible somehow shot. The shot came back off Alisson, hit him and went out for a goal kick. So I don't think Liverpool were too terrible, but that must really sort of, I think, be even more of a sickener to play a bit better and then lose so late on. Must be quite disheartening. And it's the first time in the season they'd won all 12 games when going ahead. So the first time they've really sort of capitulated, if you want to call it that.
Right. OK, it's the first time that they've been ahead in the game and not gone on to win. Crikey. Your favourite club, Daniel, your favourite player, Kerem Mitoma. Yeah.
Mitoma corner. There's almost no point. There's nothing else to say. It's just every week. And what we did say last week is that in the early weeks of his time in England, when he hadn't started much, he was clearly a surprise factor. Now he's not a surprise factor. He looks like a player who is a surprise factor, in that when you work out what he's going to do, you can find out a way to stop him. But managers know what he's going to do now. Liverpool know what he's going to do because he tore them apart in the 3-0. And then he's still the most important player against Trent Alexander-Arnold, against James Milner. It doesn't matter. He just makes defenders look silly. There was quite often on Sunday, a centre-half, as soon as he would get the ball, a centre-half would race out to that side to try and kind of double up. And he just makes the gaps look bigger than they are by ghosting through them. I mean, the composure for that goal is just remarkable.
Drifted in towards Dunk, but it's come for Estupiñán. And now Mitoma! And surely the winning goal! Kerem Mitoma!
It's not a kind of goal you really see very often.
The curious thing is that Victor Osimhen scored something really similar on Sunday night to open up the scoring in Napoli's 2-1 win over Roma. But Mitoma's, I think, was maybe better.
It makes it look like he's slowed down time for about 2 seconds and everyone else is reacting on kind of half speed. And he's just like, yeah, you just do this. It's actually really easy. You just nick it and then kick it straight away and the keeper won't expect it to come. It's like, why have I not seen lots of goals like that? Because it's an incredibly efficient way of shooting before the keeper's set.
Well, he flicks it up with the same boot that he then scores with, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, magnificent. Yeah,
kind of dummy shot, but with a little flick, yeah.
Wow. It's incredibly right-footed, yeah.
He is incredible to watch. I mean, obviously the jokes are, who's going to sign him for 50 million? Who's going to sign him? Blah, blah, blah. But I've seen a lot about people sort of saying, well, what about the scouting? Why can't we buy that? The reality is that lots of clubs have got very, very good scouting networks, of which Brighton are one. They've just got an environment in which those players thrive, and that's what other clubs don't have. And it really warms the heart until someone comes along and tells you they're going to buy your best player, whatever.
Well, yeah, although Brighton's resilience in the face of so many departures is one of the stories of the season. Mitoma has only arrived for 2.5 million, which is just extraordinary. Just extraordinary. Thursday, in fact, we were talking about Brighton as potential dark horses for this competition. But for context, Liam, since the start of this season, Seagulls have lost what? Manager? Most of his backroom staff, key people in the recruitment, biggest name defender, main midfielder, top scorer as well. Who else? Yeah. Now you've got Moses Caicedo, who's out of the team and heading off to not sure where.
Yeah, we had Ben White go sort of a season ago as well. So yeah, they keep leaving and they keep joining, sort of thing. It's incredible. I don't really know if he can sustain this level of performance with so many ingoings and outgoings, but it's clearly a sustainable model. I think we're seeing that, and that's what Tony Bloom does. That's what he's built this whole sort of club from. I think I've seen a lot of people now retrospectively posting the stats and some of the data from when Mitoma was in Japan, and like, this was good, but it wasn't maybe that niche a buy. It's maybe weird for a Western club to venture into some of those leagues. But you look at his stats when he's out in Japan, and they are top 1-2% of all players for, you know, all the underlying numbers as well as goals and assists. So these aren't, you know, hidden players. They just, clubs sometimes, I guess, aren't incentivized to look there because they don't always want to go direct to the place. You know, let Brighton buy that player, develop him for two seasons, then we'll take him when he's the developed article, which is fair. I don't expect Arsenal or Man City to go shopping in those leagues when other clubs will do the development for them.
As Liam says, the amazing thing is not that they get those players because they are a natural breeding ground. That we've seen clubs across Europe like that, Norgeland jump out as the obvious example. Clubs are happy to pay a premium because they've already been developed. The amazing thing is that they're sixth in the Premier League doing it because it's one thing to do that, but inevitably that gives you a natural ceiling. And Brighton don't seem to have a natural ceiling. They're better than Liverpool now. So that is the thing that blows my mind.
Yeah, this wasn't a shock at all. I fully expected Brighton to win this game. And the fact that Liverpool, you know, just a few months ago were close to not just winning a few trophies, but footballing immortality. You know, that's that they almost reached perfection last season and one of the most expensively assembled teams in the world. It's remarkable, really. I mean, it also shows how far Liverpool have fallen in a few months. But I'm so glad that Brighton won this because there were two. It was all set up for everyone just be talking about the referee after the game for these two ridiculous moments of injustice. I don't understand how either of these decisions were made, and there will be a much bigger deal being made out of this if Matoma hadn't scored the winner. Konate and Fabinho should both have been off the field. I just don't see. I don't know if you guys agree, but I don't see any other way that those decisions can reach those conclusions.
Yeah. I think we talk about the re-refereeing that we don't want to see. And then there's that horrible grey area now, which is the overturning the referee's decision. If the referee's seen it, the VAR doesn't want to overturn, but maybe the referee thinks, well, I'll give a yellow and let VAR have a look at it. That creates a grey area in which inevitably shocking decisions happen and completely incorrect. I mean, Fabinho almost started walking off the pitch, didn't he? He did the sorry of a red card, but not quite start walking off the pitch. But
I feel like his remorse and his apology, I don't know, did that have something to do with the decision? Because he looked so sorry. Well, if he just kind of said, oh, have that, mate, and then spat on the floor, I think he would have got a red card.
Yeah. His face, I think, looked a picture of someone who, as soon as he'd done it, had, you know, been reckless. And it was a really nasty, nasty tackle. I think McCoy's reaction in particular was, you know, and this shouldn't play into it, but knowing Evan Ferguson, you know, young, he's a teenager, he's 18, is a really horrible tackle to put on a player of that age. I know as a referee you're meant to be unbiased, it doesn't matter who it's to, but I thought in particular that was quite ugly. And I actively don't like to, you know, sort of give referees stick, because I think for the most part they're generally quite good and get often overanalyzed, but there were quite a few in this game where you think, I'm not sure about that. And I think he left the ground on crutches as well, Andy Naylor said, so obviously hopefully that's just precautionary. He'd kind of hobbled off. So, yeah, fingers crossed it's not too significant. And I agree, sort of, it's good having Matoma then score the winner because it sort of glosses over all of that and we can move past it.
Absolutely. Liverpool, as you say, Tim, not long ago they were eyeing up a quadruple. They've now won just one of their six games in all competitions in 2023. Their only hope of silverware this year now is the Champions League, in which they'll be facing holders Real Madrid in the last 16. Which usually goes well for them. Alrighty. We'll talk more about the FA Cup after this.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. With Bet Builder from LiveScore Bet, you can combine markets from thousands of options to create your own bet on the biggest football fixtures in the Premier League, the Champions League, the EFL, and around the world. So if you think you can successfully pick the first goal scorer, the final score, the total number of corners, and whether there'll be a red card, then use Bet Builder from LiveScore Bet to make up to six selections and get a single bet with the combined odds. Or if you can't make up your mind, you can choose from the pre-built quick bet options. Bet Builder from LiveScore Bet. Building a bet just got easier. Find out more at livescorebet.com or by downloading the LiveScore Bet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only. Full account terms apply. And of course, please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, host of the Athletic Football Podcast. It's the final week of January, and that sound you can hear is clubs frantically trying to get deals over the line before the deadline closes on Tuesday night. Myself, David Ornstein, Adam Crafton, and our raft of club experts will be all across the biggest moves this week, and we'll discuss the fallout when the window shuts. So just search for the Athletic Football Podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to your pods.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Put together Duncan Alexander, Raphael Honigstein, and James Horncastle for a live, unrecorded, and off-the-record chat. What do you get? You can find out, listener, if you hurry along to leicestersquaretheatre.com and snaffle up a ticket for the Totally Football Show live at said venue, which is happening on the 4th of April. You can hear what happens when Jules and Alvaro join Rafa and James in this week's Totally Football Show European edition, meanwhile, on Tuesday. They'll be discussing such diverse topics as Milan's collapse. Ooh, top five separated by just 3 points in Germany. PSG dropping points again, held by Will Still's Reims, and more. Liam, you were at the Stadio Olimpico on Tuesday for that extraordinary Lazio 4-0 Milan game.
Yeah, no, that was a great watch. It was a weird Premier League throwback. There's Pedro out on the right for Lazio and Felipe Anderson in a false nine role that I'd never seen before. And unfortunately, Tomori went off injured. But yeah, they kept getting pulled apart. It was cutback central, both sides. Yeah, it was an incredible watch.
Right. I mean, Milan's collapse of late. So prior to that, they'd lost 3-0 against rivals Inter in the Super Cup. They then lost 4-0 against Lazio. This weekend, they were at home to Sassuolo, who hadn't won a game in Serie A since October. They won this one, 5-2 at San Siro. We'll have some wild conjecture in Tuesday's show, but looking at some of those Milan players' performances, looks like something very wrong has happened in the dressing room. But yeah. Anyway, lots of that sort of thing on Tuesday. Back to the FA Cup, though, eh? Friday night, Daniel, you were at the Etihad for that whopping Man City-Arsenal clash. I mentioned before there's a lot of anticipation for this. Did it live up to it?
Not really, no. I think partly by design from Mikel Arteta, who made a number of changes which felt almost like a psychological move, that if we hold our own and win with this team, it's a huge psychological advantage. And if we go out the cup, it isn't. In recent seasons, the FA Cup has been Arsenal's kind of safe space almost. They don't really need it this season. They don't really need the Europa League either. So, yeah, it felt like a team designed to cope with Manchester City and not suffer a kind of heavy beating. And they were the better team for plenty of the game. We saw kind of standard first half Manchester City, albeit with a few direct long balls from Stefan Ortega to Erling Haaland thrown in. And then, as ever, Pep Guardiola made changes at half-time, shifted around the attack, and City looked better second half. I'm almost wondering if that's a deliberate thing now, to kind of surprise teams in the second half, at the start of the second half. I really like Julian Alvarez playing with Erling Haaland, and I find it fascinating because 20 years ago, they would be a perfect big man, little man partnership, a kind of Niall Quinn, Kevin Phillips partnership. Watching them now, they're two strikers and they play completely separately. I watched them against Forest early in the season and City won 6-0. They scored 5 goals between them and they didn't play a pass between each other. So normally you'd expect a strike partnership to kind of play off each other. Haaland wins a header, Julian Alvarez is nipping in behind, Haaland holds it off, lays it off. They don't. They all just get service in the midfielders. And it's really fun to watch. And I think teams have not quite worked out how to do it yet. I know they didn't score in this one, but it was Alvarez breaking clear, him having the shot, two defenders looking after Haaland, which means Alvarez has got a bit of space to run into and shoots, hits the post, and then they work the rebound. And it's just, yeah, it's really fun to watch. So that was the thing I kind of took from it, because, yeah, Arsenal fans were loving it, but they were basically there to chant "we are top of the league" at Manchester City fans, and that was a good night.
Indeed. You say they work the rebound. Let's talk a little bit about Jack Grealish, who's often, I think, unappreciated in terms of Man City big signings, but his work keeping that alive for Nathan Aké was pretty sumptuous.
He also is better in the second half, I think, because he tends to get fouled three or four times, and then as soon as he gets the ball in the area, defenders know that they can't tackle him, and he did a kind of give the whole dancing feet. And I've rarely seen a man more surprised to score a goal with their right foot than Nathan Aké, who I think he said it's the first goal I've ever scored with my right foot. And it was a lovely finish, kind of tidy, curled, low finish. But yeah, basically both teams got what they came for.
I mean, Arsenal might have liked to get the win, but you don't see it as disastrous or psychologically damaging ahead of the league clashes.
Daniel's
shaking
bit.
His head. All right.
I think it's useful more than anything. I don't think they need this as a competition. Likewise with the Europa League, I think they genuinely will benefit from being out of it and having just the league to focus on. Yeah.
I don't think it'll have any... I mean, this game could have had an impact on the forthcoming league clashes and the title race. If it had been, you know, a tempestuous encounter with a bit of needle or a big win one way or the other. But I think Daniel's nailed it, really. Both teams sort of got what they came for. City's reaction to Pep's bombshell comments after that Spurs game about 10 days ago has been pretty good. Two fairly remarkable and straightforward home wins over Wolves and Arsenal. Couple of clean sheets. In fact, Daniel, it didn't really come across too well on the telly, but how was the atmosphere at the Etihad? Was it any noisier?
It was quite reasonably subdued, although a kind of FA Cup caveat on that, I suppose. There are a lot of... These are the games where people who don't get to go to Manchester City games very often will come and buy a cup ticket. I also think for FA Cup games, especially at the Etihad, because how you get the bigger away support and it kind of almost fills the South Stand, the Arsenal fans were really loud. And as I say, they basically came to chant "We are top of the league" at Manchester City fans in case they don't get to do it after this season, and did it for most of the night and enjoyed themselves. So great.
Oh, nice one. Danny, what did you make of Leandro Trossard's first start for the Gunners?
Yeah, he looked really bright. He looked like a surprise factor in that teams are not as sure how he's going to play. He plays slightly different to Martinelli. He tends to come inside a lot more. He slightly tailed off as the game went on, which is fair enough. But yeah, he's clearly, if not an upgrade on the first team, he's clearly going to be an important player in the second half of the season. Just for taking on players, he was taking on Rico Lewis quite a lot and then kind of pushing inside. Had that shot that was saved by Stefan Ortega, who, by the way, I thought was probably the game's best player. He looked like a kind of Edison, a mini Edison, in the way he, particularly towards the end, he was rushing out and smothering the ball at strikers' feet and stuff. So, yeah, he was probably the game's best player. But Trossard was, yeah, he was bright, and he'll clearly have an impact. He is an Arsenal player.
Certainly is. These two sides will be meeting again on Wednesday fortnight, 2 weeks on Wednesday. That's at the Emirates in the Premier League. Next weekend, Arsenal will be having Everton. And City will be facing Spurs, who, Tim, you went to Preston to see in action. Preston, where the sun was shining, Tim.
Yeah, it was an absolutely miserable evening, I've got to say. Misty, rainy, cold. Anyway, a typically awful Spurs first half where they did absolutely nothing of note, but did sort of ease past them, relatively comfortably in the second half. There was a real gulf, a massive gulf between the two teams in terms of technique, how they move the ball, how they get the ball upfield, how they create chances. It was really interesting to see that because Preston are 2 points off the playoffs in the Championship, and you'd think that they'd be able to at least, you know, land a glove on Spurs. It's testament to the job that Ryan Lowe's doing there, because without any parachute money, you know, they're really batting above their weight against the teams around them. Spurs made a few changes for this game and were comfortably the better team, and it was only a matter of time before they did their second half thing as usual, with a couple of goals from Son, which is unusual for this season. It's only the fourth game he's scored in for club and country from 31 appearances, believe it or not. He just hasn't looked the same player at all. And, you know, the longer it's gone on, you start to question whether it is just confidence or whether he's just not going to be the same player he has been for the past few years now. Now he's sort of getting the wrong side of 30. So, but the two goals he scored, I mean, we've had this with Son a couple of times this season where he's scored and you think, oh, here we go, Son's back. But it's mostly been later in games on the counter-attack when he scored those goals, which, of course, is his favourite thing to do. Whereas these were a little bit different, a real moment of brilliance from 30 yards. And then the second goal was the one that really made me think, okay, this bodes well for him, because it was a beautiful touch, spins his man and then finds the bottom corner. So yeah, a few promising signs for Spurs after what's been a really difficult few months.
And they also got a third goal from their new signing, Arnaut Danjuma.
Well, this guy. So I wrote a piece on him last week and spoke to a few people about his career. And how do I put this? One thing constantly comes across in terms of his sort of attitude, I guess, or his personality, with overconfidence and bordering on arrogance pretty much at every turn. And he's had fallouts with teammates and, you know, accused of sort of not defending, not being able to track back. Eddie Howe dropped him at Bournemouth for that reason. So he's a character, James. That's what we say, isn't it? He's a character. Mm. And in 19 minutes, he touched the ball three times. He scored one goal, and then he spent the rest of the time absolutely berating his new teammates, ordering them where to defend, flailing his arms around when he didn't get a pass. He was, honestly, the guy's going to be absolute box office, but, you know, he's been brought in to score, and he did that with one of his three touches. So, but it'll be interesting to see how he fits in, particularly how he gets on with Antonio Conte, because that doesn't feel like a match made in heaven to me whatsoever.
All right. Harry Kane left on the bench for this one, getting a bit of a rest ahead of that big game next weekend against City. Elsewhere, Saturday, we very nearly got the story of the round in Fulham's 1-1 draw with Sunderland. I'm referring to 15-year-old Chris Rigg, who we thought had scored the winner for the Black Cats away at Craven Cottage, but it was ruled out fairly, unfortunately. So we ended up with a 1-1 draw. Good stuff from Sunderland.
Yeah, who have basically undergone a revolution in the last couple of years. They had one of the oldest teams in the oldest squads in the championship a couple of years ago, and now they are. You know, I know Rigg is a very extreme example of this, but they are, I think, pretty much the youngest team in the championship. They're playing really nice football. The injury to Ross Stewart is potentially massive. You know, I know we talk about weakened teams and it being a shame, but there is a reason for it, because when something like that happens and potentially derails a promotion campaign and playoff campaign, then yeah, that's huge news. Maybe they've got a little bit of time. I know they're signing Joe Gelhart on loan from Leeds, I think. So that's an option, but yeah, it's a huge blow on their season. But yeah, the other thing is Ahmed Diallo, he's looking handy on loan from Manchester United. I've been wincing at that fee that United pay for quite a long time, and I'm not quite sure where his pathway is at United now, but he is doing really well at Sunderland.
Chris Rigg, how close would he be to being the youngest FA Cup player in the modern era? 15 years old.
He would have been the only 15-year-old to score in FA Cup history.
Wow.
The youngest is apparently, I looked this up earlier, a guy called Finn Smith from the Isle of Wight, who scored the day after his 16th birthday. So, I think we can say that was in the early rounds. So, yeah, 15
right.
years old.
When was
the
that
FA
then,
Cup.
Daniel?
That
was
last year.
Oh, just last year?
Yeah, last year, yeah.
All righty. Well, maybe Chris Rigg will grab one when Sunderland host Fulham, whenever that game is scheduled. Also going to replays, you've got Blackburn, Birmingham, Ipswich and Burnley, Fleetwood and Sheffield Wednesday, which means those two teams will face each other four times in the space of 43 days. And also, Lee 2 Grimsby, who drew 2-2 at Championship Luton. All right. Well, more to come from the Cup and other things too after this.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, sponsored by LifeScore Bet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
It's transfer deadline day, Tuesday, everyone. Happy transfer deadline day. Restaurants will all be booked, forecourts are out of flowers, but even if you haven't made plans with your partner, you can stay up to date with the Athletic's Deadline Day blog. You involved in that, Liam?
I hope not, but maybe. Be nice quite evening otherwise. No, we'll see.
Tim,
probably.
You been drafted in for the blog?
There'll be some Spurs absolute nonsense going on till the last seconds of the deadline.
Pedro, so, Pedro Porro in, out, hokey cokey?
It was on last night and now it's off today, so we'll see what's happening tomorrow.
All right. I mean, that's pretty much what deadline day is. It's sitting around and then maybe a flurry of... The way this transfer window's gone, though...
Nottingham Forest are also prepared to do their bit for live blogs around the world.
Excellent.
It looks like they'll sign Jonjo Shelvey from Newcastle today. They're also after Keylor Navas on loan from PSG and Felipe, central defender from Atletico Madrid, potentially. Yeah, we assume they wanted some pace in the back line, so I'm glad they're going for Felipe. yeah, it's a hard one to work out. They will also be linked to at least four different Brazilians over the next 2 days, none of which you'll have heard of.
Excellent. Among names that we have heard of, Enzo Fernandes, who Chelsea are back in for somehow. Moises Caicedo, where is Arsenal? Had a bid rejected, Liam, is that right, by Brighton? What's the latest on that?
Yeah, I believe they had a couple of bids rejected. Tony Bloom keeps coming back and saying he's not for sale. He wasn't like dropped. I think it came out that like he supposedly like didn't turn up to training or whatnot. It was rather Brighton said, you know, don't come into training, and stuff got reported at like 10:30 that he hadn't turned up, which was good because training started at 11. So yeah, the can be quite hard to track the legitimacy of things, I think, but. I expect Bloom now to very much stick to it. I mean, Arsenal, if they'd come in maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, might have had a bit more success. But I think you come in the last couple of days of the window, you're going to have to pay a ridiculously extortionate fee, or it's going to be a very firm no.
Okay, so you think he might be staying at Brighton then?
I'd be surprised at this stage now if he goes, just because of how late in the window it is. Tony Bloom, for anyone that doesn't know, is literally a professional gambler. So I can't see him backing down from this.
I see. Gordon, Anthony Gordon has gone, as mentioned before, from Everton to Newcastle for £45 million, which seems like a lot. Producer Charlie asking the question, Everton have a history of selling academy products to top clubs. Is this one more Rooney or Rodwell? Tim, your take.
I mean, it is a lot of money, although they were talking about £60 million in the summer, so it's come down a little bit after his average season. I think he's got a lot of ingredients to do really well. I mean, he's versatile, he's two-footed, he's incredibly hard-working. The end product's been a massive issue for him. Eddie Howe's got a really good record, recent record certainly, of taking young talents and improving them. So I think it's the right environment for him to go in, which you wouldn't have said of Newcastle in the past, but it does feel like it's a good place for him to be going into. He's annoyed the Everton fans in recent weeks, and yeah, like I said, there hasn't been training in recent days. So you think a lovely, heartfelt sort of farewell message on Twitter, you know, might help. He did a couple of pages of notes on his tweets, a tweet that no one could reply to, by the way, because he was obviously fearing getting a bit of stick. But the line that really stuck out in this farewell message was, stick by the team because they need you, which for a guy who's scarpering halfway through a relegation battle to Newcastle, didn't quite strike the right tone, I don't think.
There you go. All right. Well, transfer deadline day is on Tuesday. Today, Monday, 30th of January, is, by the way, the anniversary of the day in 2008 when Cristiano Ronaldo scored a free kick for Man United. Do you remember that day? Do you remember where you were when Cristiano Ronaldo scored a free kick against Portsmouth, it was?
I think the two brave guys are Park and Carrick here, because you think he might smash it there. He smashed it into the back of the net. It gets even better for Cristiano Ronaldo.
I remember it feeling like a new type of free kick, what became knuckleball. And then we quickly realised that there was less control on those free kicks than anyone wanted, despite how many times you tried it over the next 15 years.
Did he try it often? I wasn't keeping track. Yeah. Okay, anyway, Cristiano Ronaldo, who's now attempting such set-piece magic over in that country... United, without him, were 3-1 winners this Saturday against Reading. A brace from Casemiro and then fancy footwork from another Brazilian, Fred, making it 3. Who was that Reading number 2 who looked a lot like Andy Carroll?
My favourite moment of the FA Cup weekend was the still of Andy Carroll's tackle that was awful, and he's in midair, and that wasn't one of the 2 tackles he got booked for. A man on a mission. It's just that that mission was read wrongly or delivered badly, I think.
Oh, well. Nice work from United, though, who've now won 11 of their last 13 in all competitions. On Wednesday, they've got another cup game. It's the second leg of their League Cup semi-final. They're 3-0 up against Nottingham Forest, of course, in that. Who's loving Ten Hag's work?
There's always been a lot of clamour, I think, at United, or particularly from United fans, for, you know, some form of attacking identity. And I think we're seeing a similar approach now to what Arteta's done at Arsenal. Just obviously they're a few years sort of further down the line of implementing a consistent shape. You know, they've brought in, I think, really sensible players. They've really strengthened up the central areas of that team. You're looking now often having Casemiro. I know, I think Eriksen left the ground on crutches. And he's now again getting the sort of criticism he apparently, I'm told, he got at Ajax for not rotating enough and sort of sticking to that core too much. But no, he's got Marcus Rashford back into what is the form of his life right now, or at least the form that he looked for a couple of years like he was never going to find again. And you see that as early days with sort of one sort of major transfer window so far. So you think with more time, someone who had quite a disastrous start, you know, only sort of now you look back and you go, oh, it's only 2 or 3 games and they've really picked up since. But I remember back in the summer, people thinking that, you know, they were really still sliding off of a cliff, even with sort of Ten Hag at the helm. So I think it's refreshing to see clubs bringing in a head coach or a manager. Things not always going immediately smoothly, but now having sort of long-term success. And I think it's hopefully going to be now a blueprint or a recipe for other clubs to look at and go, OK, we're not just going to sack this manager early on, or we maybe need to give a bit of trust and a bit of time. I think it'll be interesting to see Spurs, what they do in their long-term future now, with United being another team that have brought in a coach, recruited, I think, a bit more smartly, and have, you know, sort of now looking at having possibly some long-term success. They're what, 1 game from a final now, and they're really pushing for top 4. So I think success by their standards, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What, 11 wins in their last 13, which I think dates back to the day Cristiano Ronaldo left. What's the parallel you're making with Spurs then, that they should stick with Conte, or they should get in a manager and back him in the transfer window?
I mean, either really stick with Conte, or, you know, and align your recruitment, or look for a new head coach sort of more long term. I see why sort of, you know, post Champions League, they brought Mourinho in and they brought Conte, and I think there was a real desperation to early on, or you know, quickly win some trophies whilst your talent was good. Kane is probably still in his peak years, which have gone on for a long time now. Maybe he's off the other end of that from a few years ago when he was scoring like 35, 40 goals a season in all competitions. But I think their next head coach, whenever they choose to have it, is really, really going to be interesting.
OK. I mean, it might not be their choice the way that the noises are surrounding Conte. But Tim, they did back him in the transfer window, didn't they? Haven't they spent a lot of money and bought in loads of fullbacks, which were meant to be the kind of thing that he would suit his football? Heavy sigh. I mean,
well, they brought in a right wing back last summer in Jed Spence, who's one of the most exciting players in the Championship last season, but wasn't a Conte signing. So that's, you know, it's pretty simple to me. You align your director of football or your head of recruitment with your head coach. You give them some money to spend and you formulate a plan over the medium term. That's just not happening at Spurs. I can't see Conte staying beyond this summer. I mean, you know, Liam sort of alluded to it there. They brought in Mourinho and Conte to win a trophy no matter what the football. And that's just not happened. It's not happened yet. I would say the FA Cup is opening up a little bit. I mean, out of the top 13 teams in the Premier League, only 4 are guaranteed to be in the next round, with a couple of replays to come. So if Spurs get a favourable draw, then, yeah, that trophy drought. It's not going to happen, obviously, but it could. We have to say it could.
All right. And they've got Milan in the Champions League, who are a shower at the moment. So, yeah. Anyway, back to this week. And this Tuesday already, it's Newcastle Saints. Golly, that was quick. Saints, of course, 1-0 down, looking to turn that around up at St James's Park. They were winners this weekend again in the Cup, the FA Cup, in this case against Blackpool, with James Ward-Prowse rested. Still got a couple of free kicks Roman Perraud absolutely blasting one in, which looked like an extraordinary effort until we saw the replay and how Blackpool wall had kind of made themselves absent at the crucial moment.
I had heard the news already, but had then forgotten. So when I watched this on Match of the Day and saw Mick McCarthy on the touchline, I sort of did a weird double take. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course, Mick's back. So, yes, that was it's nice to see him back. I hope Blackpool stay up this season. So, yeah.
All right. Villa vanquishes Stevenage of League Two, gave Stoke of the Championship a bit of a scare. But eventually, Alex Neil's side ran out 3-1 winners. Tim, you threatened to talk to us about Walsall Leicester earlier on.
Yeah, good game actually. I was Midlands derby. Nice to see the Bescot full for what must be the first time in a few years. I say the Bescot; it's called the Poundland Stadium now. Sorry to give it its correct title. Yeah, Walsall stayed in the game for 94 minutes, which was a fantastic effort. And Michael Flynn, who people might remember, you know, did a really good job in Newport and caused a few cup shocks. I think he's been there a year now and he's really getting them going. But this game was sort of defined by Walsall's incredibly agricultural tackles. In the space of a minute early in the second half, Walsall player Hutchinson goes completely through Dacca in the box, gives away a penalty, which Tielemans hits against the post. Almost a perfect penalty, but yeah, he didn't score it. And then a minute later, Walsall's Wilmot absolutely crunches Thomas with a perfect two-footed tackle. I've absolutely no doubt he'd be given his yellow card in the Premier League. But it gets let go, and then he crosses for Williams, who volleys over. So Walsall should be 1-0 up at this point. I mean, Leicester fully sort of earned and merited their victory, but it did come via a huge slice of fortune. I don't know if this has officially been given to Iheanacho, who, incredibly, as I said during the commentary, has scored more FA Cup goals than any player since he scored his first one, which must be for Man City a few years ago. So he's got a remarkable record in this tournament, but this is not his goal. I'm sorry. If you watch the replay, the M6 is just behind this goal, and it's heading for the M6 northbound, and then it takes a massive deflection and sort of loops over the keeper. But yeah, Leicester, for all their problems, they really look like a team in this, because Walsall gave them a hell of a fright, and I was really impressed with their attitude. If you remember a year ago, they got absolutely leathered by Forest, I think, at this stage, and Brendan Rodgers completely called them out for an awful mentality and professionalism. Whereas a year on, you know, it looks like they're very inconsistent, but it looks like he's still keeping them afloat anyway, and they're still playing for him.
All right, and the other positive, the return of James Maddison, whose absence has been off-credited for their recent slump. Leeds were 3-1 winners away at Accrington Stanley. They're through to the fifth round for only the third time in the last 20 years. And Bristol City didn't get a penalty, which I think their fans are going to be happy with. No, I mean, once you've invested that much time and effort into the website and making that part of your supporter identity, last thing you want is a referee coming along and actually kind of making you like every other team.
And there's no point wasting it in a 3-0 win, is there, in the cup? Yeah. Save it for the last minute, 1-1, 89.
A 3-0 win against West Brom. This despite the loss of their striker Antoine Semenyo, who joined Bournemouth on Friday for $10 million. I missed that. Does anybody know much about Semenyo?
Yeah, he's got a really interesting story in that he's broken into the Ghana squad, but he was basically playing non-league football in 2018, I think. He came through Bristol City's youth academy. Was loaned kind of Bath and Newport, and suddenly started scoring goals for Bristol City. And he's they were in talks with Palace, I think, wanted him, and I think it's a pretty good deal for Bournemouth. It's $10 million. It means if they go down, they've got probably what they'll hope to have one of the best strikers in the Championship. And if they do need to sell Dominic Solanke at that point, then they've got his replacement already. So, yeah, he was named in. Ghana squad for the World Cup, which is an incredible story, really, given, as I say, where he was 3 or 4 years ago. He's still only 23, I think. So, yeah, still got room to grow.
Very nice. OK, Bristol City are through to the fifth round, the draw for which, as mentioned, will be happening Monday night before Derby take on West Ham, before Daniel here.
Going to behind enemy lines on Monday evening. On a Monday
Crikey.
Evening.
There you go.
I think I'm touting this one as an upset. Derby in really good form. You know, there's a good feeling back around the place, which there was always going to be, given that the club got saved. But that's now being reflected on the pitch. And West Ham look, they look quite one and a half eyes on league form, I think, on a Monday night. So I'm hoping for an upset.
Excellent. Well, we'll catch up on that on Thursday. Before that, of course, Tuesday, we've got that Euro show bags to talk about in that. But that brings us to the end of today's Totally Football. Many, many thanks to Liam, to Daniel, to Tim, and producer Charlie. Producer Charlie's heading off, listener. He's got family biz for the next couple of months, really. Haven't you, producer Charlie? So best of luck with that and best wishes. And we'll be back, though, on Thursday. So, listen, I hope you will be too. And we'll speak to you then. Bye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScore Bet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.